Good afternoon. It was about 3 years ago when fires raged out of control in San Diego County. At the time, we were a group of researchers, a group of community-based organizations working to serve the farm worker community in San Diego. And we had created a coalition of agencies, and we had been doing some community organizing and looking at ways to empower migrant farm worker communities to be advocates for improving their own health and their well-being. And it was after the fires, when the fires hit, that we realized that we really knew nothing about how to be prepared in an emergency or a disaster. And it was a sharp learning curve for us as researchers and as nonprofit organizations. This presentation is a result of 3 years of work since the fires on what we've been doing, both on the research side of things, as well as interventions in the community with farmworker communities in San Diego, California. The farmworker community that we worked with was already a vulnerable community before the fires, and when the fires hit, it really exacerbated tensions between the community and agencies that claimed to serve them, including community clinics, and in the case of the fires, places like the Red Cross and some of the county shelters. Like I said before, we were a group of agencies, a group of researchers. We had formed a coalition, and this coalition has been working since then, and with this vulnerable community that faces issues, as you can see, from housing, poor housing, substandard housing, men who live in camps under bushes in makeshift camps, families that live in dilapidated trailers on Indian reservations where there's no code enforcement of housing, people living in overcrowded apartment buildings, there's a lack of low-income housing, farm workers already and still face isolation and are working poor. Largely undocumented in California. There's about close to 1 million farm workers in California, and their estimates are that over half of them are undocumented, which puts them at risk for constant worry of being deported and being sent back across the border. And especially now with the large anti-immigrant sentiment, things have really escalated in the border region in San Diego County. This community faces isolation as well from services because of their undocumented status in many ways, a lack of culturally and linguistically appropriate services in these agencies too, and a lack of awareness overall from most agencies that serve the community, including the county, state officials as well. I wanted to mention here the community organizing that we had been doing prior to the fires, because it's important, it comes in later on. This was a group of líderes comunitarios, which is basically a community health worker model or a promotora model, for those of you familiar with the Spanish term. And this is a network of farm worker residents that have been trained for the last 6 years on community advocacy and empowerment. And these community workers were key during the fires to providing assistance both during the fires and immediately after, because the safety net failed in this case to serve this community during the fires and after the fires. And so we had to step in. We learned real quickly what to do, and we're still learning. And we relied on these community networks to provide services. The fires, like I said, hit about 3 years ago, just time of the year, late October. There was 8 different fires alone in San Diego County that burned for 10 days straight. Burning 368,000 acres, destroying many homes, and destroying a lot of agriculture as well. I don't have the statistics with me, but many fields burned, many avocado groves burned, and so a lot of people who were farm workers lost employment for many months. Farm workers were very vulnerable. Most farm workers make, on average, about $7,000 a year for a family of four, so they are working poor, vulnerable communities. And so when the fires hit, they lost not only, in some cases, their homes, but their livelihood as well, and have taken years to recover from this fire. I'm going to go through some of the issues, the impacts on the communities, and then what we've been doing since then. These findings are based on an assessment that we did right after the fires hit 3 years ago. We got some funding from Arnold Schwarzenegger's office, the Office of the Governor, to look at the impact the fires had on this particular community. In the area of preparedness, we found that there was not the infrastructure in place to help vulnerable communities like farm workers and migrant workers be prepared for disasters. There was no culturally linguistically appropriate information, as well as their special situation and needs were not built into part of the county's disaster plans as well. So we've been working on that the last 3 years to get that in place. No preparedness materials, like our colleagues have already stated here, and as well as unrealistic recommendations for preparedness. We had, after the fires, we had many people come in to try to train the community and say, well, you need to have, you know, $60 in cash with you just in case of an emergency, and all your medications, and you should have it at a pharmacy where you can go pick it up, and this and that. But it's unrealistic expectations for a community that makes about $60 a week, and to expect people to have that kind of cash is just unrealistic. So there was those issues in place. The evacuations were disastrous. There was Border Patrol officials in shelters, Border Patrol officials evacuating residents from communities and expecting people to actually leave their homes when there's a Border Patrol agent right outside of it. And so people literally shut themselves inside their houses and did not leave in a mandatory evacuation area that was burning down. Other families did evacuate but didn't know where to go because there was no information in Spanish. The officers were going through the residents in English. So people slept in cars and Walmart shopping center parking lots and had to seek out shelter with families and friends instead. And this evacuation was just a mess. There was people who didn't want to go to Red Cross shelters because they had heard that people were getting deported, and people did get deported from Red Cross shelter and the county shelters in San Diego during the fires. And so there was a big fear of going to get those kinds of services. And so, I mean, there's horror stories after horror stories, and I could go all day about that, and that's something that's been driving our work for the past 3 years to try to ensure that this doesn't happen again. Here's some photos of the large military presence and the Border Patrol presence during the fires. Although it was said that they were just there to help, it was still very intimidating for communities to evacuate when Border Patrol was so present. In the shelters, there was a lot of confusion, a lot of racism that happened, a lot of shelter workers that were not trained to work with this particular community and didn't know the sensitive nature of some of the issues. And so a lot of people, in some cases, were asked inappropriate questions, asked for their identification, asked for proof of citizenship to receive services in shelters. And so people who were not going to the shelters and those who were there were intimidated and afraid of the situation. A lot of the communities outside the shelter were very excluded from receiving relief, including relief from services that were available to them because there was not enough information. It wasn't being passed adequately to people, and a lot of barriers and different kinds of requirements that people didn't know how to navigate to even find out if they were eligible for a lot of services. And so a lot of people just avoided them altogether. So some of the other impacts include the very immediate impacts on people's health, including asthma and respiratory issues, and people who were injured, people who were working in the fields while they were fires were going on, and were asked to keep on working despite the fact that everybody was on mandatory evacuation, and so they had a lot of ash and health consequences from that. And a lot of families couldn't access services during this time because it was literally chaos in San Diego at this time. All of us were basically running around trying to figure out what to do at the last minute, and we really, 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 really realized that we had a lot of learning to do, a lot of training, and a lot of things to educate ourselves about to be able to ensure that this doesn't happen again next time. And the overall impact on the community has been profound. Like I said before, years after the fires, still people have suffered from that loss of work, that some people lost their jobs entirely because groves burnt down. And some people lost their homes, and they haven't been able to recover since then because they didn't have insurance. They didn't have access to a lot of FEMA resources that other people might have to rebuild their homes. And immediate needs like food and water access was difficult as well. So what we did as a coalition is we came together and we tried to provide some immediate assistance. We were able to raise about $500,000 in total for a whole range of services for this community. And as a coalition, we came together to create a plan for our coalition to respond to disasters with the farm workers in San Diego so that we can be prepared next time. And this has been a 3-year process, and it's still ongoing, and it's still difficult because we're not experts in this field. We are not first responders, we're not disaster planners, but we are the agencies working in these communities directly. And so we've come up with a set of strategies that we're using to ensure that we're meeting the needs of the community for future disasters. And my colleague Anna Haas is going to come up and talk about these strategies that we've used and the ways that we are trying to ensure that these things don't happen again. So I'm going to ask Anna to come up and talk about that. Thank you.
Okay, good afternoon. We've spent about a year developing this plan for immigrants, Latino, and populations in San Diego. And this is an overview of the strategies. I'll start with the first, arguably the most important, which is the community. We have over 120 community health workers, which you already went over the lideres, and they have already undergone about 40 hours of training with leadership, advocacy, conflict resolution, health issues, disaster preparedness. And the most important element of these community health workers is that they are already living, working, and accepted within their community. So they are imparting the curriculum that we've developed around disaster preparedness to their community in a culturally sensitive manner, and also in a way that makes sense to them. So they're using examples such as, oh, wouldn't you want your child to have this and this in the case of a disaster? And we know within Latino populations, it's really important to focus on the children and the family element in order to provoke change and help people get prepared. Also, the other element that's been really nice is the CPR and first aid training, and this has come from the partnerships that we have in the CARE Coalition. So within the CARE Coalition, we have clinics, we have the Red Cross, we also have tribal disaster preparedness, fire departments, and we have developed a program with the Paula Fire Department, which is a tribal fire department, to provide a CERT, which is Community Emergency Response Team. And they CERT trained and certified many of the community members, over 250 community members in Paula, to properly respond to disasters and to help their neighbors and their friends and families. And this is the first CERT training that we know of that's actually bilingual. And many of them now are actually in Spanish only for this community. And then also another really important element of the partnership is creating safe havens. So in the case of the shelters where we had border patrol agents and uniformed officers where people didn't feel safe, we're developing safe havens where there's churches that are friendly to this group, friendly to the immigrant and Latino populations, so that they have a place to go where they feel safe rather than staying inside their trailers or homes. Also, advocacy has also been a really important area. So it's two-part. It's awareness of the farm worker population, of the immigrant population, what their special issues are, and then advocacy, so for their rights. And the picture you see above was taken last week, and these are farm workers who are in D.C. advocating for their rights for farm worker health to legislators. And so they're giving legislators a whole range of information on their demographics and what they deserve and what's important for them within their community. We've also advocated for not having uniformed officers in shelters, and also a really great area of legislation that has gone through is AB 2327 Caballero, which is requiring that any officials in California who are state department, police officers are not allowed to ask for immigration status in the case of a disaster, which is a huge effort. Another area of the Farm Worker Care Coalition is to see what do we have. So how many cans of soup do we have in our pantry? Who do we have involved? Who do we have in the case of County Office of Emergency Services? Do we have the Red Cross? Where are we lacking in certain areas? Do we need other people involved in it to actually make this an effective plan? In terms of the capacity of the Farm Worker Care Coalition itself, we are planning on having a GIS mapping system for the different communities. They're extremely rural. They often only have one or two evacuation routes. A lot of the members of the community don't know the evacuation routes. They don't know their addresses because they're in tribal land that has multiple street names or doesn't have a designated street name. So it's also developing addresses for these family members so they can get out if they need to. And then also the ICS structure, which is the incident command structure, which has all of the Care Coalition members in it, their partnerships. It also has the community members. So we have a network with them, community members who are on the ground in the case of evacuation and mandatory evacuations to give them their mandatory evacuations. And it's from people they trust and not necessarily from authorities, which so far, unfortunately, they haven't had a great experience with. Also, along with capacity, we had a chance to test our plan with an apartment fire that was in Fallbrook. And it ended up being extremely successful. We had migrant education there to get all of the kids back in school, get their backpacks, their books, anything that they needed, help them with their homework, any classes that they missed. We also had the Spanish consulate available, excuse me, not Spanish consulate, the Mexican consulate available, who was printing out any lost documents in the fires. We also had Vista Community Clinic to have the vans to evacuate the people from their apartment buildings into the shelter. And then members of the Care Coalition who were there at the shelter giving free interpretation for any shelters or eligible services that any victims available. So I have to finish this up. So we have a continued dialogue to get buy-in. And our hope, our long-term goal, is to not have this as a separate plan. Our hope is to have this as a plan within local, state, and national that are actually advocating for these communities, and they're creating plans where they have a place in it. So we're not having these little separate ones that we're developing, but rather that we have a part in theirs. And so in California, we have the second highest number of FEMA declarations. We have 25% of our population is Latino, and 2.8 million estimated are undocumented immigrants. So beyond the area of disaster preparedness into the area of public health, if we can't effectively convince these people that we are advocating for their needs, that we are caring about what they're about their livelihood, then in the case of biological pandemic issues that Dr. Tinker and the others on the panel were discussing, then we have effectively undermined the health of the nation, not just the health of these people in a natural disaster. So thank you for your time.
Any questions for our panel, our talk? No? What about, yes? The funding for what?
For the overall project.
Overall, for the disaster plan, we got funding from the San Diego Foundation and the, what was the other one?
Red Cross.
No, the Tides Foundation in California. And then for the disaster relief work, we got multiple sources of funding, including the San Diego Foundation. There was a bunch of private donations as well, and the governor's office as well for some of the assessments that we did. Yeah, we had, as a coalition, we worked where two or three different agencies received funds depending on what they were geared for. Some of the things that we are doing, for example, that Anna didn't get a chance to mention was community classes where the leaders are going out and actually doing flip chart education to their fellow residents about how to be prepared in a disaster and their rights related to disasters as far as their right to not be questioned about their immigration status, for example. We've gotten some funds from the Red Cross to do that education, as well as the Tides Foundation as well.
So that's a big piece of the work that we're doing right now, is the community education. Yeah, we're willing to share, you know, our curriculum that we have for community education as a public document. These two reports I'm talking about are going to be available on our website, which the first one is the assessment, where we looked at the immediate needs of what people needed right after the fires, like including, you know, everything from, you know, underwear to to money to food. And then the second document is our actual plan, where we have all those elements that we talked about in more depth, to kind of help you plan a little bit as well. Yes. Yes. The question was if we've had a small scale emergency. That was sort of what Anna mentioned when she talked about the fire, the Fallbrook apartment fire. It was a small apartment fire in one particular place in San Diego, and we were able to practice sort of our structure and who does what, and we were a little bit more organized than the fires, because the fires were literally like chaos and we were just like having panic attacks. But the Fallbrook fire gave us a chance to kind of put in place all the partnerships we have built up, and then the plan that we had to communicate with each other and to work on all our, and mobilizing all of our assets. And so yeah, we did have that opportunity. And we have a bunch of simulation activities planned for the next year, so we can start practicing, not with a real disaster, but just by simulation. And so we can keep working out our the way we're going to cooperate in the future emergency, because it's just a matter of time. Yes? I don't... Right. Yeah, I've been trying to basically, like I said, it's been an ongoing 3-year process. We still have a lot to do to learn, and I'm working now on getting some stuff published out there, and we're working with the Red Cross too, because they have contacts throughout the country in similar communities with farm worker communities to make the curriculum available specifically, as well as some of the strategies that have worked for us, and I'm hoping to get that out more. Working with the National Center for Disaster Preparedness for Diverse Communities on getting that disseminated as well, this plan out, so people can take a look at it. So, thank you.